You're listening to Central Time. Effective, evidence-based treatment for opioid addiction is out there, but many people experiencing addiction aren't able to access it. A study released last year found that in 2021, only 1 out of 5 adults with opioid use disorder received medications to treat it. An addiction and public health expert is with us now to guide us through treatment options for opioid addiction and the barriers standing in the way of medication-assisted treatment. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you or a loved one ever struggled with opioid use disorder? Were you able to get help? What does recovery look like for you? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Elizabeth Salisbury Afshar is an associate professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW-Madison. She's a core faculty member in the UW Addiction Medicine Fellowship Program and acts as the medical director of harm reduction services for Wisconsin's Department of Health Services Division of Public Health. Dr. Salisbury Afshar, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Before we get into treatment, what is the current state of the opioid problem here in the United States?
Yeah, so it's a great question. And I think, unfortunately, as we probably have all continued to see in the news, we continue to see really high rates of drug overdose. We've seen some shifts over time. The vast majority of overdoses in this country continue to involve opioids, but we are seeing involvement of other substances as well. And as we're going to talk about today, we've seen significant expansion in treatment, but we continue to have some barriers and limitations in terms of supporting people to get treatment, and also in really thinking about making sure that treatment services are super patient-centered and creating services that people want to engage with.
Some people might think about opioid addiction and think it's, you know, once you have it, you're stuck with it forever. But as you were just saying, there are treatments, there are effective treatments. What are those? What do we know as far as the best options for people dealing with addiction to opioids?
Sure. So we talk a lot about medication treatments when we talk about treatment for opioid use disorder, because while behavioral treatments and behavioral therapies definitely exist and should be available to anybody who's struggling with an opioid use disorder, we know that medications are really, really important. And when we compare, we look at big groups of people, research studies and real world studies, when we look at people who are accessing one of the three medications that's available and compare it to folks who who aren't using any medication or maybe are only engaging in behavioral therapies, we see that folks who use medication have better outcomes. They're more likely to stay engaged in treatment. They're less likely to use non-prescribed opioids. And then in the case of two of those medications, methadone and buprenorphine, they're less likely to die of overdose. And so it's one of the reasons that when we talk about opioid use, we always want to talk about medication, because really the medication treatments are considered first line. And then if people are able and willing, we want to make sure that they're also accessing behavioral therapies.
Now, there's a mindset issue. I think some forms of addiction treatment in the past have said you shouldn't use a medication because you're just replacing one addiction with another. And I think that kind of thinking has affected laws and regulations when it comes to things like methadone. How big a problem is that to overcome, to say, no, this is, in fact, the best line of treatment we have?
Absolutely. It's a great question. So I think at the federal level, research is so clear at this point that the medication treatments have the best outcomes, and there has been a lot of money and attention and focus on increasing access. There are a few barriers, and one of them is regulatory. Methadone in particular probably has the strongest, strictest regulations of any medication we have available in this country. And most of that is historical. So when methadone was first promoted as a treatment, actually the original methadone studies were done among people who had criminal legal involvement. And so it was offered as both a treatment, but also specifically sort of in this criminal legal environment. And as methadone became more available, what we saw is that there were just tons and tons of federal regulations. So if I, as a family doctor, I'm allowed to prescribe methadone for pain in a clinic setting, but cannot prescribe methadone for opioid use disorder. The current federal regulations say that methadone can only be administered at a specially licensed and highly regulated clinic called an opioid treatment program, or what people often refer to as a methadone program. And those laws that were set back in the 70s are still in existence today. This is not consistent with what's done in other countries. It's not what's done in Western Europe. It's not what's done in Canada or Australia. And so there is a big push right now to move the U.S. into a regulatory environment that would look more like other high-income countries, to be able to increase access to methadone outside of the current structures that are available.
If somebody wants to access methadone, how geographically available is it? Are people having to go a long way just to get this treatment?
It depends where you live, right? Not surprisingly. And so we'll typically see that there are opioid treatment programs available in the bigger cities across the state, but definitely as you get into more rural areas, access can become more limited. Because these are federally licensed and state monitored clinics, there are really accurate lists of opioid treatment programs available both through the state and also through the county behavioral health offices. They'll have a good sense of which programs are available in individual communities. I should also acknowledge that there has been, honestly, partly because of COVID, some new allowances, one of those being that there's now an allowance for mobile methadone. So to be able to, sort of put an opioid treatment program on wheels, so to speak. And I know that there's a big push across the state to get more mobile methadone into communities that might otherwise not have access. And so we are seeing a bit more of that.
Dr. Elizabeth Salisbury-Afshar is an associate professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW-Madison. We're talking to her about effective treatment options for opioid use disorder and the barriers that many patients face when seeking treatment. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a story to share that you're willing to share yourself or a loved one of dealing with some opioid use disorder, of seeking treatment, finding it, or having trouble finding it, we'd love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. If you are a healthcare provider or first responder, what are you seeing? What kind of access do people have to treatment? What frustrates you about the difficulties in getting people to treatment? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We continue our conversation with Dr. Elizabeth Salisbury-Afshar, associate professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW-Madison. We are talking with her about medication treatment for opioid use disorder and what's preventing more people from being able to access it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a story to share about seeking medication treatment for opioid use disorder, finding it, or having trouble getting to it, love to hear from healthcare providers as well at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Jacob is with us in Eau Claire. Jacob, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Jacob?
Well, I've been hearing about I've been sober for 15 years now, kind of off and on with the Suboxone, given how, the situation in my life and what goes on. Sometimes I have to be on it and other times I don't. I'm just wondering, there's a shot out there for Suboxone, and I'm just wondering why it's not as available or advertised as the other treatments.
Jacob, thanks for the call. Suboxone is the brand name of a drug you mentioned earlier, Dr. Salisbury-Afshar, buprenorphine. Can you talk about Jacob's question there about getting these monthly shots?
Yeah, it's a great question, Jacob. I think, sometimes when medications are newer, it can take a little bit of time for them to get sort of the same level of press, publicity, or awareness. And so there are actually now two different formulations of an injection that people can get that has the same active ingredient, buprenorphine. Suboxone's the name of the film, the trade name sort of the film that people are often prescribed. And then Sublocade and Brixadi are the name of the injectable forms of buprenorphine. You know, I have to be honest, Brixadi is the newest, and I actually don't have access to it in my own clinic right now. The other medication, Sublocade, has been around now for a number of years, 3 or 4 years. I'd have to look back at exactly when it came onto the market. Because they are controlled substances, one of the reasons that it's a bit slower is that there are just extra processes around even getting them into the clinic. We can't, for example, order it through a normal pharmacy. It has to come from a specialty pharmacy. It has to get delivered directly to the clinic. It can be quite dangerous if someone were to inject it into a vein, for example. So it's a medication that's only approved to be administered by healthcare professionals who have completed a special REMS training course. So there are a few extra pieces to it, but you know, really great medication, especially for folks who maybe, you know, struggle with remembering to take a medication every day, or, you know, just find it easier to have a monthly, or Brixadi can also be weekly injection. So for folks who really want sort of a longer acting medicine, can be a really great option.
Thanks for that call, Jacob, at 800-642-1234. Kyle joins us now in Baraboo. Kyle, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, I worked in the mental health realm for quite about a decade now. I used to be a probation and parole agent. And, you know, I've referred people to Suboxone clinics or Suboxone treatment who were tied up in the correction realm of things. But it seems like the availability and the attainability, like the speaker was just talking about how some doctors aren't trained in it, is leading to like kind of a lack of resource for it. I mean, it's a great medication, but it's hard to find in the rural counties like this, Sauk County, or any of those outlying very smaller counties. What are some of the barriers that need to be addressed to be able to make it more accessible for folks in across Wisconsin and also just across the nation?
Kyle, thanks for the call. Great question. And Elizabeth, you mentioned some efforts to have mobile providers. Are there other things you could see helping? Maybe when it comes to licensing more health professionals, or I don't know what.
Yeah, it's an ongoing challenge. And I want to first start by just acknowledging, I do think things have gotten better over the past decade, but as just brought up, clearly we still have a long way to go. You know, for buprenorphine, which doesn't have the same regulations around it that methadone does, so buprenorphine can be prescribed in an office-based setting. We used to have a bunch of regulations around having this special license and requiring some special education. All of those were actually removed in the last couple of years. So some of those regulatory barriers are no longer in place. I think one of the challenges that I see, particularly in rural areas, though, is that it's not just that there's a shortage of prescribers to prescribe buprenorphine. It's that there's often just a shortage of healthcare providers in general. We're seeing primary care shortages across the country, and definitely not a ton of behavioral health providers specifically in rural areas because, you know, patient volumes are smaller. Ways to address this, I think we have major workforce issues across, and I'm actually from rural Illinois, which I know isn't always a popular thing to say in Wisconsin, but it's like the way southern part of Illinois. And so my brother and sister-in-law work in a critical access network hospital there. So I mean, I'm really familiar with the challenges that rural areas face in terms of recruiting and retaining healthcare professionals. I think that's an important piece that we can't overlook. There are also major reimbursement challenges as it relates to, you know, we don't have parity, meaning behavioral health care isn't reimbursed in the same ways that physical health care is. And then in particular, we see that a lot of we see overrepresentation of people who need substance use disorder treatment within the Medicaid population or public payer population. And Medicaid reimbursement rates are really, really low. So essentially what we're talking about is going into a community and saying, look, guys, we know you don't have enough prescribers. We know that you're really struggling to keep up with primary care volumes. But now we want you to learn a whole new skill skill set. We're going to pay you very poorly for it. And, you know, we know that you're sort of drowning just with the patient volumes you already have. Like, it's a hard sell. And I've definitely met docs and prescribers in rural communities who are like, Elizabeth, look, I want to do this work, but we just don't have enough people to do all the things I've already been trained to do. And now you want me to train to learn something new or to learn a new skill set. And I just don't feel like I have capacity. And so I think it's not just one thing. Stigma is there. And so I don't mean to say that's never the problem, but I think it's not stigma alone. It's stigma, it's reimbursement, it's the workforce challenges across the board as all things we need to continue to work on to really continue to expand access to these evidence-based treatments, including buprenorphine.
Kyle, thanks for the call. We just have less than a minute left. Elizabeth, for someone who's dealing with opioid use disorder and saying, yeah, I would love to have this kind of treatment, how do they start? How do they get the ball rolling?
You know, I wish I had like a really straightforward answer that was 100% accurate every time. I think the two places I always encourage people to start are 211. So the statewide 211 system is really working to build out accurate information on where people can get substance use disorder treatment. The other place, a lot of the services in the state are really county-based. So look up the county that the person is residing in and that behavioral health division. And I do this in my hospital work. If I'm working with somebody from a county that I'm not as familiar with, I call the county behavioral health office and I say, okay, I'm working with somebody who really wants to access, you know, fill in the blank, buprenorphine treatment, for example. Can you tell me who are the prescribers in your county? Where are they located? And I start there. And that can be a really important place to start. And if you have insurance information, unfortunately, like we all know, that often dictates where people can go. So just figuring out sort of which places take which insurance.
We'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
That's Dr. Elizabeth Salisbury-Afshar, Associate Professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW-Madison, Medical Director of Harm Reduction Services for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services Division of Public Health. She joined us for a look at medication treatment for opioid addiction. Again, a starting point, 211 if you're trying to find treatment in your area.